Welcome to the In the Limelight podcast. I'm your host, Clarissa Burt, and every week I bring you great information from fabulous people that I get to meet all over the world. I interview public figures, influencers, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, millionaires, and moguls that share their know-how, tipping points, pivotal moments, and life lessons. I promise you educative, empowering, and entertaining conversations with entrepreneurs that have a social conscience. Don't forget to find me on social. You can find me pretty much everywhere. Facebook, it's Clarissa Burt Official. Also, sign up for my newsletter at clarissaburt.com. That way you can keep abreast of the In the Limelight media as it's coming out. And you'll be getting my weekly newsletter along with the In the Limelight magazine every quarter. Check out inthelimelightmedia.com.
And welcome to Bookish Meet the Authors, part of the In the Limelight Network. I'm your host, Nisa Kotu, and joining me today is Dr. Sandra Dalton-Smith to talk about her book, Sacred Rest, Recover Your Life, Renew Your Energy, Restore Your Sanity. Hi, Dr. Sandra.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'm excited to have you on the show. What are the seven types of rest?
Yeah, so the seven types include physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, social, sensory, and creative.
Okay. So what are some examples of ways someone can get rest? These are seven types of rest, but how do they affect us, and why do we don't notice that there's so different many types?
Well, I think for most of us, when we think about the word rest, we automatically just assume rest means sleep, yeah. Or we think it just means stopping. So unfortunately, if we're putting rest only in those two cessation buckets, things that don't require activity, we don't get the full benefit of rest, because really at the very core of rest is that need for restoration, mm-hmm. that pouring back into those places that have become depleted. And I think that's the reason so many people, even when they do things that they say are rest, they still feel exhausted, because just going to sleep and waking up the next morning, that's not going to solve a creative rest or a social rest deficit. You're still going to have those when you wake back up. So we really have to get very specific in what type of rest is it that we're needing, mm-hmm. and where are we pouring out energy within our day?
Well, what would be, for example, a creative rest? Because I think, what does that mean? Because usually people think, oh, me taking a rest is doing something creative, is taking a break from whatever it is, but there must
Absolutely. So with creative rest specifically is looking at, first of all, we have to understand really what is creative energy and when are we using it? I think for a lot of people, we don't think we're being creative or using creative energy unless we're like, if you're an author or if you're a painter or a dancer or a musician, you think, oh, well, those people are creative. So they're using a lot of creative energy, and they are. But everyone uses some form of creative energy, some more than others, during their regular day. If you're having to be a problem solver, if you're having to think outside of the box, if you're a parent who's having to homeschool kids, and so now you're trying to figure out how to get your auditory child who learns from listening to teach them, as well as teach your visual child who needs a completely different set of stimuli, you're using creative energy in those instances. And so for a lot of people, there was a lot of problem solving that had an innovation really that had to happen over these past 2 years with the pandemic. So they were using a lot of creative energy without really being aware of their own need to get creative rest, which is the rest we experience when we allow ourselves to appreciate beauty in whatever forms. So for some people, they experience that in nature. A lot of people experience it around bodies of water. People, you know, sometimes will say, oh, I don't know what it is, but being at the beach or the ocean or the lake, I feel better. Something about me gets restored or energized. And that is kind of what creative rest looks like. It's that pouring back into your inspiration bucket, mm-hmm. so that you then have the ability to continue to create at a high level.
So it's like basically recharging the batteries. It's finding that thing that brings you back to yourself and not constantly working your brain to do something that you don't even realize is being creative sometimes, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because for some people, and creative rest is so individualized, like for myself, oftentimes it's in nature. So I experience creative rest around just being outside walking, looking at flowers, or, you know, just experiencing nature. One of my closest friends experiences it when she's looking at art. So for her, being in nature doesn't do very much for her. However, when she goes to an art museum or when she goes to a local gallery and she's looking at other people's work, she creates art herself. But her creating art is work. That's not a release for her. Yes. That's actual work for her. But consuming the beauty of others' art and others' creative works is how she gets inspired.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So what are some examples of ways someone can get rest in the middle of a busy day?
So most of us in the middle of our day, we're thinking, okay, there's no possible way to get rest because I have to keep working to get all the things done. So what I help like for people to actually start evaluating is, are there some habits within your day where you can attach on restorative activities? In other words, don't think about rest as only occurring when you're on vacation or only occurring when you are taking off these huge chunks of time. Because if we only look at rest in these large chunks, most of us will never get it. And that's the problem right now. People say, I don't have time to rest, because they're trying to find these 3-4 hours where they can go get a mani-pedi and a massage and all these other things that we have incorrectly lumped into what rest looks like. For someone who maybe is doing back-to-back Zoom sessions, you know, their work is all hybrid now and they're virtual. So they're spending a lot of time on their computer. They may be experiencing a sensory rest deficit where they're getting kind of overwhelmed in their senses because of the light, sounds, and all the things related to that. A simple rest strategy that might be beneficial for that person could include something like, okay, well, the 5 minutes in between my Zoom sessions, just take a few moments to close my eyes, turn off all the sound in my home, you know, making sure that you don't have the radio or TV or something else playing in the background. Just a few moments of sensory deprivation, silence, in the middle of that busy day, just to downgrade the sensory inputs and allow them to recalibrate. Yeah. Whereas most of us, we don't do that. We grab our cell phones, we start tinkling with the notifications and the social media apps. And so we keep the sensory input high, and then we wonder why we're so agitated and irritated at the end of our workday. And a huge part of that is because we're sensory overwhelmed by the time the workday ends.
Yeah, I try to meditate during the, like for 5 minutes or something, but I don't talk a lot during my job throughout the day. So I usually will put on a meditation and just turn off the TV and like lie down somewhere. Sometimes if I can't even put like something over my eyes so it gets darker, just to have that moment of, I need a break from everything. And also I start off my mornings with silence. I don't turn on the TV. I try to journal, but I don't have sounds throughout the day. And then
I love those. Yeah. And meditation is a great way to experience mental rest, because most of us are overthinkers. We're constantly processing and regurgitating information and putting it through the loops of what could, would, should happen. Yeah. And so meditation is a great way to kind of focus our thoughts so that we get a little bit more cerebral kind of quiet in our head to be able to experience that mental rest that a lot of us are looking for.
My question is, so maybe the biggest thing people might have is distinguishing what type of rest they need. Mm-hmm. Like that must be the toughest thing, because not everyone, like people don't realize creative means one thing, mental is one thing, physical is another, because most people think, oh, I'm just going to go to sleep, that will solve all the problems. No. You said also like turning off the TV and putting in silence and not having anything open. How do you distinguish maybe which rest is best for you?
Yeah, that's actually the core reason behind the rest quiz that we developed. It's a free assessment at restquiz.com to actually help people identify which of the 7 types of rest they're most deficient in. A simple way really that someone can begin to do that would be to think about, where are you spending energy in your day? You know, what type of work do you do? Which of these 7 areas do you expend the most energy? Are you dealing with other people and their personalities and attitudes? Are you having to think and process and calculate information? Are you having to be innovative and creative and think outside of the box throughout your job? You know, wherever you're using the most energy is a place that has the potential to have a deficit, especially if you're not doing something very intentional about restoring the place where you're pouring out.
Makes sense. Why did you begin researching rest and work-life integration?
Simple answer, I burned out. So I was in clinical practice for, I've been in clinical practice for over 20 years now. I've been in practice for roughly about 7-8 years at the time when I burned out. I had kids back to back, two toddlers under the age of two, kind of 21 months apart, in the middle of when my practice was kind of booming and really starting to thrive. And in the process of that, I had no idea how to get all of those balls in the air at the same time. And so really just burned out and got to a place in my life where on the outside, it just looked extremely successful to people. Oh, she has book contracts. Oh, she's on CNN. Oh, she's doing this and that. But on the inside, that was probably the worst I've ever felt in my entire life. It was a beautiful life to look at on the outside and watch on Instagram. And it felt just as horrible to live it. Yeah. And so I, you know, got to a place where I felt like if I did all of this work to build a life that I hated, then there had to be a way to undo that and to build a life that I enjoy. Yeah. And so that was the beginning of that process.
And this also kind of fits into that whole mentality that we have, right? Of if we're hustling, if we're constantly working, if we're overworked, then we're doing it right. Like there's a pride in like being exhausted and being overtired and being like, I did. And I've obviously with your book and also you see a shift in people being like, no, there needs to be a balance. You can't just work on fumes anymore. You can't, being burnt out is not an achievement. It's not what's the word I'm looking for? It's not like a patch of honor. It's not like, this is not a good thing. This is your body telling you, please stop. I need to rest.
That's so true. And I think that's how I feel like that's how I was living. Like, oh, well, this exhaustion is my badge of honor. This is what this is what I need to do to show that I'm, you know, a successful businesswoman or a successful professional. But, you know, that really isn't success. And honestly, it takes no courage to live like that. You're kind of just feeding into an idea of what it should look like based on things that we either see on TV or we hear other people talk about. And for myself, a huge part of that was really just kind of taking ownership. As I stated, if I built that life, then I can build something different. And I need to be a nonconformist. If I, you know, if I want to take a 5-month sabbatical or whatever it is, I need to create the life that works with me, with my personality. And honestly, I never took a 5-month sabbatical because that isn't my personality. I'm a natural high achiever. I'm a doer. I like work, but I needed to learn how to work in a way that I can maintain my energy, maintained my joy of the work that I was doing and actually stayed in a healthy mental place.
Yeah. It's finding that balance, right? Between the two. Cause you said you love to do those things, but even though you love it doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep
going. So true.
You're not an advertiser bunny.
And that's really where I spend a lot of my time now. And when I'm working with corporations within their wellness initiatives or working with coaching clients is really just taking a look at, are you passionate about the work that you do, but you no longer have the energy to do the work? Because I find that a lot of people are jumping out of jobs because they're like, this job's exhausting me. Well, if they don't learn the skills and the techniques, they're just going to go to a different job and have the same toxicity because they haven't actually learned how to have work-life harmony. Yeah, I rarely use the word balance because I always feel like you have this teeter-totter and you're trying to, do I live, do I work, kind of back and forth. And you really want them to kind of just merge in a healthy way to be integrated.
Yeah, that makes sense. Integration makes more sense. But it's kind of like you have all the ingredients to make a pumpkin pie. This is what you're used to making. This is what you're used to doing. And now you want to try to make a different dish, but all you've given yourself is these ingredients. These are the things it's retraining maybe to think, oh, I have to learn other things. That's why I'm exhausted. I love it, but there has to be other tools I can use to not reach this point instead of the same thing.
Yes, that's so true.
And why do you think people are still so tired after getting a good night's sleep? Which is a question that I would like for myself, actually.
Yes, I think for most people, they're getting sleep, but they're not getting high quality sleep. Yeah. Or they're not getting the actual rest that they need. It wasn't sleep that was the problem that was causing the fatigue in the first place. You know, I often look at rest as a bridge to better sleep, because for most of us, it's a rest deficit that can be keeping us from sleeping deeply. If you have a mental rest deficit and your mind is constantly thinking and processing, you know, you may be completely exhausted, lay down to go to sleep at night, but you're thinking all the things, you know, you're running through your to-do list for the next day and you're thinking about conversations you had. And unfortunately, the way the brain works, you're not going to be able to go into those deeper levels of non-REM sleep if your head is actively processing something that it's trying to hold on to, because it'll hold on to that thought even at the expense of you sleeping. Yeah. So I think we really have to look at how some of these rest deficits actually filter over into our ability to sleep well.
Yeah. Because isn't the point of sleep and dream to help your subconscious deal with whatever issues, whatever it is that you're maybe not doing in your conscious mind? It's kind of like that help. And then also, like you said, rest and sleep are not the same thing, but we assume that they are. We put them all in the same bucket. Like, no, they're not. Like, you have to remember rest, like the the taking a break to do whatever it, to find whatever it is, or the rest that you need, and also then there's sleep, which I think is, you just pointed out, lovely, like they're separate things, which I think I struggle with now. So you're speaking, I'm like, oh, they're separate. You're not the same.
Yeah. And I love that differentiation that you had there regarding kind of how we process information in our mind when we go to sleep, because you're right. There's that subconscious brain, and then there's kind of that forefront of thought. And when you take something, like if you had a conversation with a client or with a coworker or something at work, and it didn't go so great, you know, maybe they reprimanded you about something or, you know, gave you a negative criticism, and you're like mulling over that before going to bed. What I find for most people is because they're mulling over, it's actually not in their subconscious, it's in the forefront of their brain, and they can never really process it, because all they're thinking about is the actual, like, what happened? What did they say to me? This, you know, all of those kind of things, what they wish they'd said back to the person after they've had a chance to process it. When really what you're wanting to do is get to the root problem. So yeah. Just a simple technique that I tell people to do with that is to, instead of like jotting in your journal kind of the what happened, you know, oh, this person said this and that about me, or, you know, whatever it was that occurred, you actually write down what that, how that made you feel, because that's really at the core problem. That's how you get emotional rest and mental rest in that situation. You get the emotional rest of stating honestly what feelings you had in the moment, and the mental rest of releasing the thought out of your head onto something concrete, like a journal or a piece of paper, so your brain doesn't keep it processing all night. Yeah. What happens then, you take it out of the forefront of your brain onto something concrete, which then allows you to, as you go to sleep, to let your subconscious work through kind of the underpinnings of that. You know, or do you have an issue with insecurity? Do you have an issue with acceptance or whatever it is? Imposter it's hard stuff. To get to that until you deal with the other stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just thought that I try to journal before I go to sleep, and I realized the days that I journal, just do a free write about how I'm feeling and don't really try to like do a recap of my day, are the days that I feel like there's more of a release. There's more of, I feel better at the end of it than the days where I'm like, I don't know what to write, and I just do a recap of my day because there's something I don't want to talk about. I don't know what to say, or somehow I don't want to go there yet. I don't want to write about it. I don't want to think about it right now. So but you're right. Like when you sit down and you write about how you feel, there is that very different release that I get instead of just journaling. Oh, this is what happened today. This is what I did. And it's a massive to-do list. But yeah. Actually, that's a good realization. Like, oh, that's what I need to start doing more. And I just free write.
Getting emotional rest when you're writing because emotional rest is simply the rest we experience when we're very real and authentic about what we feel. Yeah. And so you can do that with people, you know, but then you have to find safe people. And sometimes that's harder to do than just to write it in a journal where you get it out, because that's the release. It's, you're not holding those feelings in.
Sometimes I just talk to myself. Sometimes I just say things out loud because writing may be difficult, but sometimes I just express it, just say it out loud. I'm like, I have to be alone. It's not like I'm having a conversation with others, but there is that release of, if I can't find someone to talk to, just talk to myself, just have it said out loud.
Yeah. And so during COVID, a lot of people mentioned, you know, I can't be around my support system, or, you know, I don't have the access to the people that I normally would feel are my safe place. A lot of people started doing it with their, voice memo on their phone, because you say it, you know, you need to get it out of you. You say it, and then, you know, they kind of have it captured, so to speak, and then they delete it whenever they, or they reprocess through it, or they, you know, take it to their therapist or whatever it is. but it allows them that freedom of kind of releasing it. Yeah. And so I think it's great to have it in places where, like, you know, if it's in your journal, you can always rip the page out if you don't want someone else to read those thoughts. Yeah. If it's on something like a post-it note, which a lot of people do who don't like to journal, just a quick place to write it down so you get it out of you, and then you can destroy it whenever you're ready.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. So where can people find you and your book?
Yes, my book is Set Free to Live Free. Or I'm sorry, that's my other book. My book is Sacred Rest, Recover Your Life, Renew Your Energy, Restore Your Sanity. And that, as well as my book, Set Free to Live Free and Come Empty, can all be found on Amazon. And the best way to reach out to me would probably be on my main website at ichoosemybestlife.com. And definitely to take the quiz at restquiz.com. It's a free assessment. Takes about 5 minutes. It is a true assessment. It's got about 70 questions. So it's not a quick fix. It's actually going to walk you through a process. And so that's a great way of finding out which of the 7 types of rest you're most deficient in.
That's great. And also, I think anything that's a quick fix is probably not going to, it's just going to be a bandage on the problem instead of actually solving it, right?
It's a so quick true.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Sandra. It's so nice meeting you. And I wish you continued success with your book and with all your work that you're doing. And thank you, everyone, for joining me on Bookish Meet the Authors. I hope to see you next time. Bye-bye for now.